busy. The most common question people ask you when you haven't seen them in a couple of days, how are things? If you haven't seen them in a couple of weeks, a couple of months, how are things going? The most common answer in my life, and probably yours, is busy. How's work? Busy. How's home? It is busy. How is just life in general? Busy. Especially like this time of the year when things are increasingly more chaotic and you think, I always think that Thanksgiving is a long way off, and then it happens, and I think, oh, well, that's fine. I've got lots of time till Christmas. And then I realize all of the things that get scheduled between Thanksgiving and Christmas mean now I have zero time for anything at all. Also, in the software industry, it's fun because we usually have a little bit of a lull in November, and then somewhere around the 1st of December, a bunch of companies figure out that they have budget that they have to spend before the end of the year. Yeah, and so then they go, oh, let's start building stuff. And so usually by about December 20th, I'm not sure if I can let my team take a week off, you know. But it's been a little better this year than normal. We live in an increasingly busy world. We have technology that is supposed to make things go faster. And everyone now knows for sure that computers don't make work faster. They just give you more work to do. And they don't, you know, technology doesn't make anything go faster. It just makes things possible that weren't possible before. And we come up with all kinds of things to fill in the available time. Being busy doesn't always necessarily mean you're accomplishing something, though, right? You can be very, very busy and very inefficient and be getting nothing done. A good example of this in my life is the fuller my calendar is at work, if you look at my calendar and it's full, it's all day meetings, the less I'm going to get done that day because I'm going to be sitting in meetings and not actually doing anything. And there are some meetings where I can't just have my laptop open doing my work and ignoring whatever's happening in the meeting. So being busy doesn't necessarily mean you're efficient or you're getting something done. And this is kind of a side note, but just because I like talking about it, there's this idea in leadership theory, the Pareto principle. And the Pareto principle is that 20% of your work gives you 80% of your results. The 80-20 rule works with lots of things. It works with, a holiday party. 20% of the people will bring 80% of the food to the holiday party, right? And then 80% of the people would just be glomming off of that. 20% of the next holiday party you go to, you'll notice this, 20% of the people will eat 80% of the food. And the other 80% will, you know, graze politely, and then there will be the 20% who just chow down on everything. If you want to organize your life really efficiently, what you do is you line out the things that you have to do. And if you take the top 20% of those, the top 20% of my priorities, if I have 10 things to do, it's the top two things. And if I just do those two things, more often than not, I'm going to get 80% of my net results. The rest of my time, I'm going to spend just getting that 20%. So it's important to prioritize things and make stacks of lists of things. One of my favorite ones is this little square you can do where you can put things in high importance, high urgency, high importance, low urgency, low importance, high urgency, and what's the last one? Low importance, low urgency. Low importance, low urgency is stuff you will never do. You'll die and it will still be out to be done. Low importance, high urgency is the stuff that takes up most of your day because it's not important and it's taking you off task, but it's really urgent to somebody else. High importance, high urgency are the things that you really should do. The quote from the John Maxwell book that has some of this info in it that I read once, and this is possibly my life quote, okay? Ready? You cannot overestimate the unimportance of practically everything. Yes, it's so true. If you really just dial it down, there's a lot of noise. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in your day and your life, especially now that we have the internet and we have Facebook to look at all day. That's a lot. There's a lot going on there. There's YouTube videos that take at least half of every day for most of us, of cats doing funny things. But even though there's a lot of activity, there's not always a lot of things getting done and getting accomplished. And a lot of times we don't spend our time on those most important things. We spend our time on the most urgent things or the most present things. You know, you've ever like sat down at your computer to do something. I have to send this email. I have to accomplish this. I have to fill out this form. And then, you know, you get distracted by videos of cats. And then it's an hour later and you're like, what happened? Why did I not get anything done? Modern American church, unfortunately, has this same syndrome because it's part of our culture that we sometimes have a lot of activity. We keep you busy, but we don't always necessarily accomplish a lot with our activity. Now, it doesn't mean our activity is all bad. It just means that sometimes we forget the main point of things. I read a survey a couple of years ago about evangelical Christians. That's what we are. We're evangelicals, meaning we're that sect of Christians, which is most of them in America, that believe that you ought to tell other people about Jesus, right? Because we're evangelicals. It's a really simple line and includes most churches in America. There are some churches who are like, I don't know. People will either hear about Jesus or not, and you don't have to tell them if you don't want to. We're not those, but we're this other group. But evangelicals, there was a survey of evangelicals who had left the church recently. And they said, you know, on a scale of 1 to 10, rate all these different things of why you left. Why have you stopped going to church? Number one reason, far and away, by a big, big margin, was we are exhausted. We're just tired. We've got so many things going on, and we have all these work things and family things and friend things, and then we have church things, and it's so much. There's so much to do, and we're just tired. So in Luke 10, there is this story that you all know. It's the story of Jesus coming to Mary and Martha's house, and I'll read it to you. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where there lived a woman named Martha who opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came and asked him, "Lord, don't you care?" I imagine Martha is very dramatic. "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." This is something I hear a lot when I tell the kids to go upstairs and clean the playroom. I can't do it by myself. Don't you care? Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, "You are worried and upset about many things." Just hear Jesus saying that. Oh, Martha, 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 Martha. You're worried and upset about so many things. But few things are needed. Indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. And the thing you understand when you get to know Mary and Martha, because they're in the story of Jesus a lot, is that this is sort of, you know, the pattern of how Mary and Martha interact with each other and how Mary and Martha interact with Jesus. Martha interacts with Jesus from a purely, Jesus is the great teacher, and so I must serve him, and I must do all of these things for him, and I must do, and I must be always acting, and I must always be doing something. And Mary approaches Jesus from this very close relational kind of an aspect. So Mary sees things that everybody else misses because Mary's looking for them, and Mary is just sitting and watching and listening and learning. If you read John chapter 11, verse 1 through 2, starts out the story of Lazarus who dies and Jesus raises him from the dead. Now a man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village of Mary and her sister Martha. Okay, same two, Mary and Martha. And then John says this, which is out of order, out of sequence in his gospel. He says, "This Mary, whose brother Lazarus now lay sick, was the same one who poured perfume on the Lord and wiped his feet with her hair. John knows that this is a commonly known story, so as he's telling it, as he's going along, he says, oh yeah, by the way, I'm going to tell you about that later, but this is the same Mary that I'm going to talk about when I talk about that story. So John sends us on this quest through the Bible, linking his stories together. In fact, the next chapter, John 12, you see Mary and Martha, and it's 6 days before Passover. Jesus came to Bethany where Lazarus lived, whom Jesus had raised from the dead. So Lazarus is now not dead anymore, and Jesus is coming back into town, and he stops by Bethany to see Mary and Martha and Lazarus. Here, a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. I highlighted this next part. Martha served. Martha did work. That's what Martha did. That's Martha. She's like, I will serve. While Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him, then Mary does this crazy thing John talks about, took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. So Mary understands that there are a lot of things to be concerned about, but there are only a few that matter, indeed only one. And as she's with Jesus, she's very present with him. And I imagine Martha as this person who has you over to their house and you don't get to talk to them all night, right? Because they're just very busy doing things for you. And it was really nice that they had you over, and it was really great. You saw their house and they cooked you an incredible dinner and you had dessert, and they probably, you know, shined your shoes while you weren't looking and did a bunch of great stuff for you, and you left with a hand-embroidered, thank you note, thanks for coming over. And it was really great, but you never really connected with that person at all because they were just so busy. They were just shuffling. And they were doing things for you, and yet there was no connection between you and them. And that's kind of the Martha approach to Jesus. That's actually kind of the us approach to Jesus. A lot of times we go, okay, I'm going to do these things. I'm going to do this and this and this and this and this. And I'm going to go to church, and I'll read my Bible and pray every day, and I'll grow. And I'm just busy. But I don't do the Mary thing where I stop and sit at his feet and I just take it all in, and I have this deep, intimate, close connection with him. And Jesus says there are a lot of things to worry about, but only a few that matter. Indeed, only one. And Mary has chosen the one thing that matters. Jesus says it this way in Matthew chapter 11. Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you'll find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, my burden is light, which is a metaphor about, you know, yokes on oxen and putting burdens on them and that kind of thing. And the deeper meaning that we miss is we understand that's some sort of a farming reference, but it's actually a reference that was commonly used for any teacher, any rabbi in that day. Their yoke was known as their teaching. It's their canon of teaching. It's their list of rules. And every rabbi had one. They all had a yoke. And if you were a follower of a rabbi, you understood that rabbi's yoke and that rabbi's burden and what that rabbi was putting on you, because the rabbi was interpreting the law and it was telling you, here's what you have to do in order to fulfill the law. We understand the law says this and this and this. Here's how I interpret that, and here are the things you can do. These are how many feet I think you can walk on the Sabbath and still be okay with God and not be struck by lightning. Here's how much, you know, you can get your goat out of a ditch but not your donkey, whatever it happens to be. So they're coming up with the rules, and they have this canon of teaching, and they call it a yoke. And Jesus says, my yoke is easy. My burden is light. He's saying, the canon of teaching and rules that I have for you, I'm not going to place something heavy upon you, but you're going to learn how I live and learn how I walk, and it's light and it's easy and it's not busy and crazy and psychotic. It's that thing he said to Mary. There are a lot to be busy with, but only one thing that is needed. When Mary is sitting at Jesus' feet, this is really an idiom for receiving teaching. This idea that you're sitting and listening to Jesus, you're hearing what he says, you're receiving it into your heart. And by doing that, you understand what he's saying, and you're able to apply it, and you're able to use it in everyday life and that kind of a thing. I was thinking about that this week, and I was thinking, you know, this week I and you will interact with a lot of busy, overworked, stressed out people, and sometimes I are one. And the question is, will you show them or demonstrate for them how you be a Mary or how you be a Martha? And which one of those approaches do you take to your faith? Because it says a lot to people. Unfortunately, most people look at faith as a series of rules, a heavy burden, something that you're going to put on top of yourself and somehow try to live up to. And yet, if you follow Jesus and if you listen to what Jesus actually said, he's saying, no, it's light and easy and not heavy and it's not busy and stressful. There's a lot of things to worry about, but only one thing that really matters. Peace in the midst of chaos is a powerful proof of the life of Christ in me. Peace in the midst of chaos is a powerful proof of the life of Christ in me. If I'm able to walk through the seasons of life in a peaceful manner, as opposed to a chaotic, stressed out, caught up in Christmas manner, then it speaks volumes to people who are around me. And I get this wrong probably more than I get it right, but I'm working really hard at it, and I'm trying to follow Jesus in a way that following Jesus is the primary focus of my life, and everything else I do somehow serves that and is part of it, right? So if sitting at Jesus' feet, learning from him, following him, being his disciple is the primary thing in my life, then I think differently about how I work and where I work and what I do. I think differently about how I spend my free time. I think differently about how I raise my kids or treat my spouse or my girlfriend or whatever it happens to be. How I react to my boss or my coworker. I want people to understand that for me, following Jesus is first, and everything flows out of that, and everything comes out of it. And everything I have and everything that I do comes from that, good, bad, indifferent. So, a little table talk tonight. I have some questions that you can key off of, or you could make up your own questions, as you always can. First question, do you have just a little bit of sympathy for Martha? I kind of do when I read this thing. I kind of think Martha is trying really hard. She, you know, misses it a couple of times, but I have a little sympathy for her. Why or why not? What does sitting at Jesus' feet look like in the 21st century? And I think the simple Sunday school answers are what we always say, right? Well, it means you read your Bible and you pray and you go to church. But what does that really actually mean? What does that look like? Jesus isn't physically walking around. We can't go and sit physically at his feet and pour perfume on him. What we can do is figure out how we incorporate times of, you know, solitude and listening and learning into our lives. And how do we keep that from becoming just another thing to do and another burden? I thought about this while I was writing this up. I said, you know, this seems pretty simple, but it's actually really hard. So why is it so hard? Last one, how's your week looking? How can you be a or an, is what I wrote down there. That's nice. An example of peace in the midst of chaos. So talk amongst yourselves, and then I have one more thing that I'll interrupt you with for about a minute, and then we'll be done. One more thing for you to think about tonight. If it is true that Jesus' yoke is easy, his burden is light, but we are stressed out trying to follow him, we are freaking out trying to please him, I think that means we're doing it wrong. I think that means like we've somehow added something to it. And whatever we've added to it, we ought to get rid of, and we ought to go back to the basic stuff, because Jesus says one thing is needed. So this week, this month, this Christmas season, when things go gonzo, I want to encourage you to find some time to sit at his feet, to listen to the things that Jesus says the way that he says them, to read. I mean, one of the things I do every once in a while is just read through the New Testament with one of those red letter Bibles, and I just read all the red stuff, which is the things that Jesus said. I call it reading the red. And when you read the red, you get this picture of Jesus that is so cool. Read the things he actually said and take off your self-imposed burdens and take on his. So Jesus, help us to see you for who you are and to hear the things you said the way you say them, and help us to live easy and light in following you and serving you, and let that be a great example to others of how to live a life of peace in the middle of a crazy, busy world. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, continue.